The tales on this podcast are dark, sometimes scary, and full of adult themes. As a warning, the original story of the Magic Cask features elder abuse and depictions of dead bodies. Please exercise caution for children under 13. Gianna stepped out onto the porch and surveyed her yard. The chickens wandered around, pecking at the barren earth of their enclosure. Nearby, a sickly-looking pig napped under the shade of a crooked old elm tree. In the center of the yard, a filthy earthenware cask sat in a puddle of mud. It was big enough for a man to fit inside, and made of rough red clay with a pattern of waves scratched around the neck. Gianna's husband had brought the vessel home earlier that day. He'd been so excited about finding it that Gianna hadn't had the heart to tell him it was completely useless. For one thing, it was far too large, and for another, it had a crack in it. She set a pail of water down beside the cask. They couldn't sell it or use it to store wine, but maybe once it was clean, she could think of some way to use it. Gianna looked it over. Now that she was standing so close to the cask, she noticed that the thing seemed to vibrate with a strange sort of energy. When she touched it, the hairs on the back of her neck stood up, and she got a strange feeling in the pit of her stomach. Gianna shook her head. She was being silly. She pulled up a ladder so she could scrub out the inside. As she leaned over, Gianna lost her footing and took hold of the neck to steady herself. As she did, she accidentally dropped her brush into the vessel. In the moment that the brush fell below the neck, Gianna felt as though her whole body had been zapped with a sort of stinging heat. She felt lightheaded and dizzy, and then, in an instant, everything felt normal again. Gianna looked down into the cask, and her mouth fell open. The huge vessel, which had been empty just moments ago, was now filled to the brim with brushes. I'm Vanessa Richardson. You're listening to Tales, a Parcast original. Every Wednesday, we dive into the dark origins of another fairy tale. You can find all episodes of Tales and all other Parcast originals for free on Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts. To stream Tales for free on Spotify, just open the app and type Tales in the search bar. At Parcast, we're grateful for you, our listeners. You allow us to do what we love. Let us know how we're doing. Reach out on Facebook and Instagram at Parcast and Twitter at Parcast Network. Today, we'll be recounting the Chinese folktale of the Magic Cask, a cautionary tale about the corrupting power of wealth. The Magic Cask comes from a collection of Chinese fairy tales translated by a German theologian named Richard Wilhelm. Wilhelm first came to China in 1899 as a Christian missionary. He spent 25 years there and was one of the first Europeans to bring Chinese philosophy and religion into the Western cultural consciousness. Wilhelm came to China during a time when a racist ideology termed Yellow Peril was sweeping through Europe. This prejudice centered on a vision of Asian people as violent and primitive madmen, possessing dangerous magical powers. The result was rampant discrimination and resistance against Asian immigration to Western countries. What makes Wilhelm remarkable is his resistance to that tide of xenophobia. Wilhelm had an immense love and respect for Chinese religions and spirituality. He's best known for his 1923 translation of the I Ching, an ancient divination text with significance in Buddhism, Confucianism, and Taoism. A close friend of eminent psychoanalyst Carl Jung, Wilhelm once boasted to Jung about how proud he was that he'd never made a convert in all his years as a missionary. The first edition of his Chinese fairy book was published in 1917. It included 73 tales selected to represent a range of the different types of Chinese folktales. Though some of the stories had been published elsewhere, Wilhelm made sure to collect all of his versions from oral sources. His intention with the collection was to show the Western world the richness and value of Asian cultures. He wanted to do this by creating a snapshot of Chinese folk traditions in the early 20th century. The Magic Cask does that exceedingly well. It's a story stocked with meaningful symbolism, where every detail holds a powerful message about the culture it came from. Mo Su sighed contentedly as he made his way up and over a saddle between two rocky mountain peaks. It was a cool, foggy morning. The damp earth had already soaked through the fabric of his yak hide boots, but he felt cheerful. He'd been married for 6 months, but he still woke up every day feeling like the luckiest man alive. Before he met Gianna, Mo Su had been deeply dissatisfied with his life. Everything around him drove him crazy. He'd hated how small his house was and that he had to share it with his grandfather. He was miserable knowing how poor they would always be. Most of all, he couldn't stand the fact that he was expected to go out and cut firewood while certain members of the family sat on the porch all day playing mahjong. Mo Su had always hated his grandfather. If it wasn't for him, Mo Su would probably be one of the wealthiest men in the valley by now. Years ago, his family had owned a prosperous farm. They'd built a big wooden house with a tiled courtyard in the middle. They'd planted a tea garden, and his great-grandmother had bought hairpins of gold and silver. But all that had changed thanks to his grandfather, Chen. Chen's father had wanted the family to move up in the world. He'd pinned all his hopes on the young Chen passing the imperial examination and launching the family into the aristocracy. He'd sold the farm to pay for tutors and schooling. Chen had the best education that money could buy, but Mo Su supposed that no amount of money could make up for stupidity. His grandfather hadn't even passed the first round of examinations. Mo Su shrugged off these bitter thoughts. None of that mattered anymore, not now that Mo Su had Gianna in his life. She made their tiny clay hut seem like a palace. As he surveyed the hillside spread out before him, Mo Su noticed a circular piece of pottery jutting out of the ground. He frowned. That hadn't been there the day before. As he came closer, Mo Su realized that the piece might be part of a larger vessel, and an enormous one at that. Mo Su knelt down beside the piece of pottery and dug away. After a few minutes, he had uncovered the shoulder of what he now realized was a gigantic earthenware cask. This might be worth more than what he could make in a whole week of chopping wood. Mo Su continued digging. Hours passed. Before he knew it, the sun was setting and he was standing at the bottom of a 6-foot hole. The enormous container loomed over him. He surveyed it. The cask was large enough to hold 3 people, and from what he could see, it was entirely intact. He would need help in order to get it out of the hole, but once he had, they could sell it for a handsome sum. Mo Su leapt up out of the hole. He ran home through the darkening forest. When he reached the cottage, he flung the door open and called to Gianna. She emerged from the small, smoky kitchen, drying her hands on her tunic. Mo Su picked her up and swung her around. He kissed her, and Gianna laughed, asking, "What's gotten into you?" Breathlessly, Mo Su explained his discovery. He asked after his grandfather, for he'd need someone to help him carry it home. Just then, the old man came hobbling in from the yard with a scroll in his hand. Mo Su pursed his lips in a contemptuous grimace. His grandfather loved to read. He still owned copies of the 5 classics and the Tao Te Ching from his school days. He would spend hours reading beside the fire pit in the yard. Mosu thought his grandfather had a lot of nerve. Someone who bankrupted his family by not being smart enough should give up reading altogether. Mosu called out to Chen, "Grandfather, put on your coat. I found a massive cask in the middle of the woods, and I need you to help me bring it home." Chen smiled at him.
"You have? What luck! And you found it all by yourself in the middle of the woods?"
Mosu took a frustrated breath and nodded. Chen continued,
"Well, then, it should be fine to leave it there until tomorrow."
Mosu had been so excited only a minute ago, but just a few words from his grandfather had been enough to bring him down to earth. He snapped at Chen, saying that he would like to bring it home now, in case anyone should happen upon it in the middle of the night. Chen smiled serenely and said,
"Simplicity, patience, and compassion are your greatest treasures, my son."
Mosu felt his face growing hot with rage. He was about to start yelling at the old man when his wife took his arm.
"I think your grandfather is only tired and doesn't want to fall ill in the cold night air. Come, I can help you bring it in from the woods."
Mosu turned to look at her. She was truly the best thing he had in his life. He sighed deeply and agreed to go the next day. After all, he didn't want to make her go out into the cold. She had done nothing but work hard all day, cooking, cleaning, and tending to the few skinny chickens they kept in the yard. His grandfather chimed in with a quotation from Confucius. This one was something about obeying the father who owns the house. Mosu tried to ignore him. As they ate dinner, Mosu could not keep his mind from drifting back to the cask in the field. He thought of the strange feeling it had given him when he touched it. He thought about it as he made a fire of small sticks in the little stove, as he washed his face, and as he lay down to sleep. This morning he had been so contented, but as he tossed and turned under his thin blanket, Mosu was overwhelmed by desire. Knowing there was profit sitting out there, waiting to be dug up, it reminded him of how poor they were, how poor he had always been, and it made him want more. Coming up, Mosu learns of the cask's extraordinary powers. Now, back to the story. Mosu dragged a small bamboo cart behind him. Nearby, his grandfather, Chen, wandered along the mountain path, stopping every now and then to gaze dreamily at a plant or a bug. They were headed to the place where Mosu had found a mysterious cask buried in the ground. Mosu had wanted to go and fetch the vessel on the very same night he found it. He'd been worried that someone would happen upon his valuable find and take it for themselves. Of course, his obstinate grandfather had refused. It had rained in the night. The hole that he had dug around the vessel was filled with mud. Mosu mentioned that if they'd gone the night before, they wouldn't have to pull their find out of a pit of waist-deep mud. Chen smiled and replied,
"The softest things in the world overcome the hardest things in the world. Through this, I know the advantage of taking no action."
Mosu rolled his eyes and chose to ignore him. Mosu and his grandfather climbed down into the hole. As they tried to take hold of the vessel, Mosu lost his balance and slipped into the muddy water, taking Chen down with him. Mosu's grandfather emerged and sprayed out a mouthful of mud with a laugh. Mosu wiped the mud from his eyes without amusement. With no small amount of effort, Chen helped Mosu heave the vessel out of the pit. They rolled it onto the cart and started towards home. Mosu pulled the cart while Chen wandered slowly beside him, gazing at the forest in quiet contemplation. As they approached home, Mosu kept his eyes trained on the distant light of his house, All he was thinking about was how nice it would be to empty out the pig trough and take a nice hot bath in it. He was so preoccupied that he didn't notice a root growing up over the ground. Mosu's foot hooked under the root, and he pitched forward into a soft bank of moss. As he fell, Mosu pulled sharply on the cart. The cask wobbled slowly from side to side. Mosu called out to his grandfather, but Chen was too far away to do anything. The vessel toppled over in a long arc. It landed on top of Mosu, knocking the wind out of him. Straining, Mosu pushed the vessel off himself. It rolled away, landing with a crack on a nearby rock. Mosu sat up, breathing heavily. Chen meandered over and looked down at the pot. He called out to his grandson,
"Well, I suppose we don't need to bring it home anymore."
Mosu gritted his teeth. What nonsense was this? He picked himself up and walked over to where his grandfather was standing. He looked down and groaned. A crack had opened up at the base of the vessel. The break wasn't particularly big, but Mosu knew that it was significant enough that the cask would never hold liquid. He turned to his grandfather, who was smiling serenely. Chen's calmness only infuriated him more. Mosu balled up his fist and pulled back his arm. For a moment, he really thought he was going to hit the old man. But then he thought of last night. He remembered how calm and sweet his wife had been. Though he couldn't understand why, she loved Chen. It hurt him to imagine the look on her face if his grandfather walked through the door with a black eye or a bloody nose. Mosu took a deep breath and turned away from his grandfather. With great effort, he pushed the cracked vessel back onto the cart. Mosu didn't even look at his grandfather, who was walking along, humming cheerfully to himself. He gritted his teeth and began to pull the cart towards home once more. When he reached the little mud hut, Mosu dumped his find in the middle of the yard. He grabbed his axe and headed back into the forest. His clothes were wet and covered in mud, but Mosu would rather spend a whole day in wet, dirty clothes than another second with his grandfather. If Mosu had his own money and his own house, maybe the old man would have to do as he said, but he didn't. The tiny clay hut, pathetic as it was, belonged to Chen. After hours of hacking angrily at tree trunks, Mosu began to feel calm enough to head home. Mosu deposited the wood he had chopped on the porch. He wondered if maybe his wife might have drawn him a bath. Chen would have told her about what an exhausting day they had had. At the very least, he could look forward to a hot meal and some consoling words. But when he walked in the door, Mosu was shocked to find his wife beaming with joy. She flung her arms around him and laughed excitedly. Gianna explained how she'd been cleaning the cask when she'd dropped a brush inside it. When she'd gone to retrieve the brush, the belly of the container was filled with brushes exactly like the one she'd dropped. Mosu's face fell. As if this day hadn't been hard enough, now he had to worry about his wife, too. Was she ill? Perhaps she had a fever and had begun to see things. He placed a hand against her forehead, but it felt perfectly normal. His heart sank. This must be something much worse. Gianna only smiled and laughed.
"I'm not crazy or sick, I promise you. Here, follow me."
She took his hand and led him into the kitchen. The cask sat in a corner. Piled up next to it were at least 200 bamboo cleaning brushes. For a moment, Mosu just stared, but then a terrible thought crossed his mind.
"Gianna, where did you get these? These aren't stolen, are they?"
She laughed again and told him to climb the ladder propped up against the side of the cask. What he really wanted to do was to call for a doctor, but she was looking at him with such earnest joy that he felt he should at least humor her. He climbed up to the mouth of the vessel as she asked. She handed him a brush and told him to drop it in. Not wanting to upset his possibly quite unwell wife, he dropped it into the cask. For a moment, he felt a strange tingling. His vision blurred. Though Mosu was looking directly at the pot, he couldn't see inside it. Then, as suddenly as it had come, the feeling passed. He was looking into a pot filled with brushes, exactly like the one he had just dropped. He looked at Gianna, and she beamed at him. It would seem that their days of poverty were over. Three months later, Mosu pulled his cart through the rain over the paved streets of the marketplace. He ducked inside the little alcove that they had rented. He lit the oil lamps that hung from the tiled roof and began to unload his wares. He pulled 50 brushes from the cart and arranged them neatly on the bamboo mat that covered the floor. Then he sat down and waited for people to arrive. As the rain cleared, the marketplace began to fill with customers. Sadly, none of them seemed interested in his wares. When Mosu had started selling the brushes from a straw mat on the side of the road, people couldn't believe how cheap they were. Every time someone asked him about it, Mosu just winked and said his wife was a miracle worker. At first, they were selling more product than they could haul to the market each day, but lately, things had been slowing down. He'd sold a brush to almost everyone in town, and there weren't many who were interested in buying a second, no matter how cheap it was. The day drew to a close, and the people began to clear out of the market. Mosu was counting his meager earnings when he looked up to see Huang, the plump fishmonger, standing in front of him. Huang explained that his daughter had lost the brush he'd bought some months ago, and he needed another. Mosu smiled wearily. If only everyone's daughter would lose their brushes. Huang frowned thoughtfully at Mosu.
Actually, I've always wanted to ask you, why is it that you only sell brushes? After all, if your wife is such a miracle worker, couldn't she make other things as well? Perhaps brooms or dustpans?
Mosu began to shake his head, but then he stopped. He hadn't even considered the idea before now. They were making so much money from the brushes, and he hadn't wanted anything to ruin it. But it made perfect sense. If the cask could reproduce brushes, shouldn't it be able to reproduce other things? If they could sell dustpans, they could make just as much money as they had at first. Mosu smacked his head. Money, of course. They could drop a coin in the pot and see if that would reproduce. Then he wouldn't have to bother selling anything at all. Huang coughed uncomfortably. Mosu shook his head and murmured an apology to the befuddled fishmonger. He began to throw the remaining brushes into his cart. He was headed home to make some money. When Mosu reached the little clay house, he burst in the door to find his wife and grandfather seated together at the low-carved oak table he had bought for them. They looked up from the game of Go that they'd been playing, and Mosu grinned. Panting from exertion, he explained his idea. Gianna frowned.
We have plenty of money as it is. Why do we need more?
Mosu pointed out to her that since almost everyone in town had already bought a brush, they might as well have an ordinary piece of pottery. Gianna shook her head disapprovingly and turned to Chen.
What do you think, Grandfather? After all, this is still your house.
Chen frowned and turned over one of the little white pieces in his hand. He looked up at Mosu and smiled.
Be content with what you have. Rejoice in the way things are. When you realize there's nothing lacking, the whole world belongs to you.
Mosu wanted to scream. Here he was trying to make money for the family, trying to keep them from sinking into poverty once again, and the old man was quoting Lao Tzu at him.
He made a little strangled sound in the back of his throat, but then took a deep breath and quieted himself. He told his wife that he would respect his grandfather's wishes. Her face melted in relief, and she thanked him for being such a good grandson. Mosu smiled curtly. Mosu was quiet through much of dinner. He ate quickly and then told Gianna that he was going to bed. He laid down in their new bed, but he did not go to sleep. Instead, he stared up at the canopy of polished cherry wood, running his fingers over a coin in his pocket. When his wife climbed into bed beside him, Mosu closed his eyes and pretended to be asleep. He waited until he heard her breathing become slow and steady, and then he crawled out of bed as gently as he could. He put on his silk slippers and padded quietly to the kitchen. He propped the ladder against the cask and climbed up to look inside it. Mosu peered into the depths of the vessel, and for a moment his heart tightened in guilt. He didn't feel bad about disobeying his grandfather, but he hated lying to his wife. He reminded himself that he was only doing what was right for the family. Then he dropped the coin. As soon as the coin fell past the neck, Mosu felt that strange, electrifying sensation, but this time it was stronger. Before, it had been a gentle shock, but now it was so overwhelming that he almost fell off the ladder. He felt dizzy and his head was spinning. For a moment, he was afraid he might pass out. He clung as tightly as he could to the wooden rungs, and the world in front of him went gray. All at once, it came sharply back into focus. Mosu found himself looking into a vessel that was filled to the brim with gold coins. He picked up a few of the coins and ran them through his fingers. As he did, Mosu thought about Gianna. He knew she would be angry with him, and he would have to find some way to make it right. When we return, Mosu's greed spells his own undoing. Now, the conclusion of the story. Mosu lay awake all night thinking about what he had done when his grandfather, Chen, had told him not to try putting a coin into his magic cask. He'd been furious. It was like the old man didn't care about money at all. Of course, he'd done it anyway. The vessel had magically filled with coins, just as he'd expected. Even though he was overjoyed to see the wealth, Mosu felt a pang of guilt clutch at his heart. It tore him up to know that he'd had to lie to his wife, but he had an idea of how to fix it so that she wouldn't be angry with him. Mosu arose at dawn. He crept back into the kitchen, and once he had situated himself atop the ladder, he called frantically for his wife. She came rushing into the kitchen, and he began his well-rehearsed speech.
Gianna, you won't believe what's happened. I came this morning to get some more brushes, and as I was leaning over, a coin slipped out of my pocket. I didn't mean for it to happen, but look, it's filled up with coins.
For a moment, his wife just stared at him in disbelief. Gianna raised an eyebrow and asked,
"So a coin just happened to fall out of your pocket?"
He nodded. Gianna looked at him skeptically. Mosu felt his palms begin to sweat. He gave his wife a weak smile, and she made a scoffing noise. She said coldly,
"You may be a rich man, Mosu, but you're not a good one."
With that, she walked out of the room, shaking her head in disappointment. In the weeks that followed, Mosu did everything he could to try and win his wife's forgiveness. he bought a large house, the very same one that his great-grandfather had owned before they fell into poverty. He filled the house with beautiful possessions, a teapot of burnished copper, porcelain vases, and cushions of blue silk. He bought her beautiful clothes and hired servants to tend to her every whim. But still, she would not speak to him. As time went on, Mosu grew bitter. His wife might be angry with him, but he knew who was really responsible for his unhappiness. His grandfather was the one who had insisted they not even try dropping a coin in the cask. If Chen hadn't been so obstinate, Mosu wouldn't have had to lie to his wife in the first place. Every time he saw his grandfather enjoying any of the fine things he'd bought, it only made him angrier. If Chen had his way, they never would have brought it home at all. Why should he enjoy the sumptuous feasts that were prepared by their new cook, or the gardens that were tended by their new servants? Chen had done nothing to deserve these luxuries. Mosu had bought a number of embossed scrolls to display proudly on a little lacquer shelf. One day, he found the old man sitting idly in the great hall, reading one of these scrolls. Mosu snatched it out of Chen's hand and began screaming at him. He asked Chen what he had done to earn money for books. The old man looked up at his grandson with hurt in his eyes, but Mosu was unmoved. He went on, "Nothing. You've never done a day of work in your life. I've had enough of you. If you want to stay under my roof, you'll do an honest day's work to earn it." When Mosu had finished, Chen looked up at him sadly. His grandfather spoke in a quiet voice.
"When it was my roof that we lived under, you always did as I asked. Now that we're living under your roof, I will do as you ask."
His grandfather's pathetic tone only made Mosu angrier. He told Chen that if he wanted to make himself of use, he could go to work shoveling gold from out of the cask in the kitchen. Chen nodded. He wiped a tear from his eyes and then left the room, shuffling off towards the kitchen. He wouldn't just lie down and let his grandfather make him feel like a villain with his pathetic display. Mosu stomped towards the kitchen. Chen was standing on the ladder next to the cask, ladling spoonfuls of gold onto the floor. As soon as Mosu saw him, his anger boiled over again. The old man was purposefully being slow. He didn't want to help. He just wanted to make Mosu feel guilty. He wanted to prove once and for all that he was some kind of saint, while Mosu was just a greedy, money-loving monster. Mosu yelled at him again. Why was the old man using a spoon when they'd brought a spade in from the garden for this very job? Mosu said that this proved it. Chen was just as lazy as he'd always thought. He'd given the old man one simple job, and he couldn't even do that right. He picked up a heavy iron spade and pushed it into the old man's hands. The old man took hold of the weighty shovel. A tear dripped down Chen's cheek as he turned to his grandson and spoke in a trembling voice.
"I never minded when we were poor, you know. I was always just happy to be living with my grandson."
Mosu felt like he had been struck. He looked down at his fine clothes and the expensive furnishings of his kitchen. Mosu had never been so deeply unhappy in his life. A lump rose in his throat as he watched his grandfather try to lift the heavy iron spade. He opened his mouth to tell Chen to put down the spade, but before he could, the old man made a strange grunting sound. He clutched his chest. The spade clattered to the floor. His eyes seemed to bulge out of his head, and then he began to tip over. Mosu rushed to pull him down, but it was too late. The old man toppled over into the cask. As Chen fell, Mosu felt that same sensation he had felt so many times before. Only this time, it wasn't a tingle or a shock. It was a bolt of lightning that ripped through his body like a sword. The world disappeared in a sea of gray, and Mosu collapsed. When he came to, he was lying on the floor, and his head was screaming in agony. He pulled himself upright and stumbled over to the ladder. He climbed it and peered into the vessel. His grandfather's terrified eyes looked out at him, frozen in a terrible moment of grief and pain. And that same face was repeated dozens of times as the cask had made multiple copies of Chen. The bodies were twisted at odd angles, a horrific tangle of human flesh. Mosu screamed. Eyes flooding with tears, he reached for his grandfather's body and pulled it towards the neck of the cask. The weight of their two bodies tipped the vessel. It wobbled for a moment. Mosu fell off the ladder and onto the floor. The cask landed with a thunderous crack against the red terracotta tiles. The crack in the earthenware split open. The vessel broke in two, and a flood of dead grandfathers came spilling out. One after the other, the bodies rolled out from the broken pot over the tile floor of the kitchen. In the middle of all that chaos sat Mosu. He held the old man's lifeless body tightly to his chest and wept like a child, crying for his grandfather to come back. It took just over a week for Mosu to sell the house and all the fine furniture. He dismissed the servants and the cook and moved back into the little clay cottage. On the seventh day, he held the largest funeral that the little village had ever seen. 40 bodies, each in their own marble sarcophagus, were carried on the shoulders of 250 mourners. They were followed by a 30-piece band and 40 Taoist priests. When they reached the green field where Mosu had found the cask, 100 chickens were sacrificed, along with 50 pigs. Finally, the bodies were buried along with glass and marble figurines, dishes of prepared food, and jugs of wine. As he watched 40 copies of his grandfather descend into the earth, Mosu caught sight of his wife. She hadn't touched him or spoken to him since he dropped the coin into the cask. He finally understood why. She came to stand beside him, taking his hand and intertwining her fingers with his. They watched the gravediggers shovel earth over the 40 graves. As he began to cry, she held him close and whispered in his ear, "He would forgive you." There were two dominant schools of thought in ancient China, Confucianism and Taoism. These two ideologies were engaged for many years in a battle for the hearts and minds of the Chinese people. Though Taoism was an extremely popular belief system in ancient China, at the beginning of the Tang Dynasty in 618 CE, Confucianism began to take root in the Chinese systems of power. It would eventually become an ideology affiliated with the ruling classes. Often, the way this played out in fairy tales was that many stories could be read on the surface as straightforward texts promoting Confucian thought. However, upon closer inspection, incongruous elements make the subversive Taoist underpinnings of the story clear as well. One conflicting element for these two opposing worldviews is the role of money. Confucianism stresses that money should be earned according to the laws of a rigidly hierarchical society. If you're a farmer, you should make your money as a farmer. If you're a scholar, you must make it as a scholar. Once again, we could see the magic cask as a straightforward representation of these principles.
Because Mosu earns his money by unnatural means, his wealth is taken away. Taoist belief, on the other hand, stresses that we should abstain from overindulging in material pleasures. It advocates living within one's means and striving to be at peace with what you have. It's interesting to note that Mosu doesn't lose his money until he becomes overindulgent. It's a small detail, but it makes it clear upon closer inspection that the problem is not how you earn money, but rather how much you have and what you do with it. When Richard Wilhelm recorded the Chinese Fairy Book, his intention was to provide a snapshot of the belief systems of Chinese people in the early 1900s. In the case of the Magic Cask, the snapshot is clear. Two opposing ideologies are ingrained into the fabric of a very human story. One is in the broad strokes of the narrative, and the other is in details only visible upon closer inspection. The Magic Cask tells a story about choosing between two competing ideologies. It's a tale that would have rung true for anyone who heard it in ancient China. Thanks for listening to Tales. We'll be back next week with a new episode. You can find more episodes of Tales and all other Parcast originals for free on Spotify. Not only does Spotify already have all of your favorite music, but now Spotify is making it easy for you to enjoy all of your favorite Parcast originals, like Tales, for free from your phone, desktop, or smart speaker. To stream Tales on Spotify, just open the app, tap Browse, and type Tales in the search bar. And don't forget to follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Parcast and Twitter at Parcast Network. Join me next week for another dark and surprising fairy tale. Tales was created by Max Cutler and is a Parcast Studios original. Executive producers include Max and Ron Cutler, sound design by Kenny Hobbs, with production assistance by Ron Shapiro, Carly Madden, and Freddie Beckley. This episode of Tales was written by Zoe Louisa Lewis, with writing assistance by Greg Castro. I'm Vanessa Richardson.